case of the day. Gabriela Cordova Soto as petitioner versus Eric Holder, respondent. Ms. Sweeney.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Megan Sweeney on behalf of petitioner Ms. Cordova Soto. The BIA made three legal errors in its decision to affirm the denial of Ms. Cordova Soto's motion to reopen. First, the 90-day limitation period for filing motions to reopen does not apply to this case because the underlying removal order was invalid since the immigration judge failed to make the required finding that as a pro se individual, Ms. Cordova Soto signed her stipulated order of removal knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently. Second, the BIA misapplied the standard for equitable tolling in the circuit by holding that the knowledge of the procedural status of one's case is the standard for determining when equitable tolling applies. And third, the BIA erred in denying sua sponte reopening, citing only a lack of exceptional circumstances in this case, while failing to address the legal and constitutional issues the legal and constitutional errors made in Ms. Cordova Soto's case. I'm going to address the second issue, the equitable tolling issue.
Before you do, Ms. Sweeney, would you please address why you are here instead of in the Eighth Circuit?
Yes, Your Honor. The underlying removal order that was entered against Ms. Cordova Soto in 2005 was issued by an immigration judge sitting in Chicago, Illinois.
Right, but the proceedings related to this all took place in Missouri, if I recall.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The motion to reopen, that is.
That's correct. Since the removal order was entered in 2005, an immigration court was opened in Kansas City, but at the time the underlying removal order was entered, an immigration judge sitting in Chicago entered that order. This court has stated that venue is proper where the operative orders were entered. Here, submit to the court that the operative order to be reviewed is the 2005 removal order.
But not the motion to reopen. I thought your brief argues that what you're here on is the court's ruling, the IJ's ruling on the motion to reopen.
That's correct, Your Honor. But in looking at the motion to reopen, this court will also have to look at the underlying removal order, which is the 2005 order entered by the immigration judge in Chicago.
So in reality, you are attacking the underlying removal order.
We are attacking the BIA's legal reasoning used to deny the motion to reopen. In doing so, both this court and the BIA would need to look at the underlying order, the 2005 order that the Chicago immigration judge entered.
Suffice it to say that venue here would be unusual, but it's a peculiar case.
I think that's fair, Your Honor. I think it's an unusual case since through no action of Ms. Cordova Soto, the government opened a new immigration court in Kansas City since the underlying removal order was entered.
Ms. Sweeney, before you get into the equitable tolling issue, I'd like to ask you about Section 1231A5, which prohibits reopening or reviewing removal orders when the alien reenters the United States illegally. Under your theory of the case, is Ms. Cordova Soto any worse off legally by reason of her illegal reentry into the country?
Of course, Your Honor, counsel would not have advised Ms. Cordova Soto to reenter. However,
I'm sorry, what?
I said, of course, we acknowledge that the reentry was illegal. However, for purposes of this case, Ms. Cordova Soto is no worse off because the reinstatement bar to reopening only applies while the reinstatement is pending.
This seems like a very odd reading of 1231A5 if it has no effect in these proceedings.
Your Honor, reinstatement and reopening are covered in two separate sections of the statute.
1231A5 refers to reopening or reviewing the order, right?
Correct.
That's what you're trying to do here.
That's correct, Your Honor. The reinstatement bar was first enacted when immigration judges had jurisdiction over reinstatement. So an individual could, in essence, file a motion to reopen in order to unnecessarily delay the reinstatement of the removal order. Since immigration judges no longer have jurisdiction over reinstatement proceedings, the statute is written no longer addresses the same problem that it was meant to address originally.
It's still there.
It is still there, Your
Honor. It's broad, and it frankly reads like an immigration equivalent of the rule that's applied in criminal appeals, namely that if you escape and become a fugitive, the court will dismiss your appeal, no matter how erroneous the conviction might have been. Let me put it this way. By what authority, in light of 1231A5, could the BIA have even considered granting relief in this case?
Well, it's notable, Your Honor, that the BIA did not address the reinstatement.
I know they did not, but I'm asking you, if they ask you, and as I am asking you, by what authority, in light of 1231A5, could the BIA reopen after her illegal reentry?
I believe the Ninth Circuit, Your Honor, in the Morales case held that an individual would be able to reopen a removal order after the reinstatement proceedings were finished and they would be removed from the United States.
The court has said that. And I've seen a few cases from different circuits that talk about maybe allowing an exception for a, quote, gross miscarriage of justice. I haven't found any yet, and have any cases actually granted relief through this kind of collateral challenge to an underlying removal order by someone who has reentered the United States illegally?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any cases on the same facts. However, in the cases of in absentia removal orders, I believe there is no bar to when a person could file a reopening even if their removal order had been reinstated.
Well, presumably they would know that they had been removed, right? In the case of an in absentia removal.
That's correct.
And they would get the warnings, you can't come back into this country, it's a crime for you to reenter, right?
Correct.
So I guess I come back to, we've got a pretty clear message, it seems to me, from Congress in 1996 saying, even if we make mistakes, as we know happens in removal orders, the remedy cannot be self-help, no matter how compelling the reason, like a mother returning to her children.
I would submit to Your Honor, as I stated, that that the law has changed since 1996, and the reason for the underlying reinstatement bar here, that the immigration judge had jurisdiction over the reinstatement proceedings, no longer exists, and a person cannot delay, file a motion to reopen to delay in the same way that they could when Congress wrote the statute. I see I'm into my rebuttal time.
I'm not going to look at Judge Bauer when I say this, but I'm going to give you an additional 3 minutes for your argument, and the other side will have the
okay.
same.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Nelson?
Good morning. Excuse me. May it please the Court. Aaron Nelson for the respondent, the Attorney General. I would like to start by saying that I find it telling that Petitioner's counsel opened with a very candid reflection that the operative order to be reviewed in this case is the 2005 order. That actually makes our first point on the lack of jurisdiction for a petition for review for failing to file such petition within 30 days of the 2005 order makes that point for us. But that notwithstanding, We believe that the court need not reach any other issues here beyond the issue of untimeliness. The untimeliness of the motion to reopen is dispositive of the petition for review. A motion to reopen where there's a final order, only one may be filed, and it must be filed within 90 days of that final order. Here, the final order was entered on November 8th of 2005, and after petitioner was unsuccessful in the 10th Circuit, then she filed a motion to reopen with the Immigration Court in December of 2011. So it's clearly untimely, and none of the exceptions apply in her case. The exceptions that are enumerated and codified in the statute deal with applying for asylum to the extent that there would be changed country conditions. Another exception is for in absentia removal orders, and another exception is for battered spouses. She doesn't fit any of the exceptions. Now, opposing counsel says that where the underlying waiver and stipulation is constitutionally or legally defective, she doesn't have to meet the timeliness for a motion to reopen. And I just simply say that if that were the case, then the 90-day timeliness provision in statute and regulation is meaningless, because any time someone makes a similar claim, they could get into court and argue all of the other things that she attempts to argue. So she cites for support why the 90-day deadline for filing motion to reopen, several cases, but none of them are aligned with her situation. She cites several board decisions, and in each of those decisions where there was a stipulated removal order, the alien in those each and every case timely filed his or her motion to reopen. She relies on the case of Bulnes-Nolasco in her opening brief and in her reply brief, but as counsel said in her opening remarks and acknowledged, that's an in absentia case of removal order. And again, the statute allows for an exception for in absentia where an alien argues, I didn't have notice. And that's a sort of a bedrock principle. I didn't have notice of proceedings. An in absentia order of removal was entered. So she tries to take the principle from in absentia and transpose it to all motions to reopen. And lastly, she looks to support on the Ninth Circuit case of Ramos case. But that case, there was no motion to reopen at issue. And in fact, it was a criminal case. And therein, in the criminal case, the validity or lack thereof of the removal order becomes part of the element of the crime. So therefore, in that Ninth Circuit case, it could be reviewed as an element of the crime. Next, I would say that to her argument that somehow the 90-day deadline for motions to reopen should be tolled, I would argue that, as this court well knows, for it to be tolled, one has to exercise due diligence. And if we look at the actions she took, wherever you place them on the timeline, we would say that it's a lack of due diligence. She agreed on November 1st to the stipulated order of removal based on advice she got from pro bono counsel and immigration authorities that was correct at that time. She was removed on November 10th, and some 17 days later, she unlawfully returns to the United States. So, and then she says that when she returned to her family, she led a quiet life. By quiet life, the record reflects that she didn't work, she didn't drive, she laid low, she stayed at home.
That's quiet.
That is quiet, yes.
Mr. Nelson, did the BIA have the power to grant her relief in the form of reopening?
I believe that it did not.
Under 1231A5?
Exactly.
Okay. I found it odd that the board didn't mention that as one of its reasons for denying, for affirming the immigration judge's decision.
So did I. But I believe that as we've crafted the scope of review, we believe that both decisions, the immigration judge and the board's, are under review by this court.
Well, if the board didn't use that as a reason, can you, in your argument here, under the Chenery doctrine?
Well, I believe that we don't run afoul of Chenery because the board said approvingly the multiple reasons the immigration judge denied reopening, and admittedly it didn't specifically identify 1231A5, but I would say, and we say, that the scope of review must show that the board's reasoning was discernible from the record, and we believe that the 1231A5 jurisdictional bar is at play. But I would return to my opening argument that all of this is not necessary to be reviewed in light of the untimeliness of her motion to reopen. And I would just, my last point I would like to say with regard to due diligence and the tolling is, she claims in her statement and affidavit here and in her affidavit before the 10th Circuit that when she came back into custody of ICE officials in 2010, that's when she learned of what she calls the murkiness of the law, the state of the law for someone with her criminal conviction in 2005. Now, we stand by the principle that the state of the law as it was relayed to her was correct when she entered into the stipulation. But in regards to due diligence and tolling, in August, September, or at the latest October of 2010, the record, in her own words, say that she became aware of the, in her words, problem with the 2005 proceedings. Yet from fall of 2010 to December of 2011, she failed to file that motion to reopen. She first went to the 10th Circuit, thinking that she'd win there, and when she lost there, then she filed the motion to reopen.
She was represented by counsel from the time of her arrest in March of 2010, wasn't she?
I believe that's correct.
In the criminal prosecution that's pending on the third reentry, I think it is.
Second
reentry, right.
Yes.
Do you know if there is a challenge to the validity of the removal order in that case?
I believe that proceedings there have been continued, and
pending the outcome of this.
Exactly. That's what
she's in Mexico now, right?
No, she's actually in federal custody in the Western District of Texas, based on her second
criminal detention.
Exactly, not immigration detention. Criminal detention. She's been appointed a federal public defender, and in my now a bit long ago discussions with the AUSA, those proceedings are, I believe, continued pending the outcome of the case here before this court. So I see that my time is almost up. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Do you view 1231A5 as jurisdictional for the board?
For the agency, I do. Thank you.
Right, thank you, Mr. Nelson. Ms. Sweeney, how much time remaining? 4 minutes.
Your Honors, I would like to suggest to the court that no court has ever found that 1231A5 is a permanent bar to filing a motion to reopen. And if the comparison that the court made is between the reinstatement bar and the fugitive disentitlement.
And there's no court that says it's not a bar either. Is that correct?
Only as I stated earlier, Your Honor, the Ninth Circuit has suggested that removal order has been reinstated, that a person could file a motion to reopen after they are removed. However, Ms. Cordova Soto filed her motion to reopen when she was already removed. So her reinstatement proceedings were completed. Therefore, our argument is that the reinstatement bar does not apply to her case since her proceedings were completed. But to turn the court to the errors that the immigration judge made in this case, by regulation, the immigration judge is required to make a finding when a pro se individual signs a stipulated request for removal that the person does so knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently. As the court can see from the record, the immigration judge never made this required finding. Either on the face of the record, the immigration judge never had a hearing to speak to Ms. Cordova Soto to determine whether she had signed her rights away knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently. And so, therefore, the immigration judge failed to abide by this written regulation and deprived Ms. Cordova Soto of her rights as a lawful permanent resident of the United States, as a person who has been here since she was 9 months old, a person whose husband is a United States citizen and whose children, her four children, are United States citizens. The BIA also misapplied the standard for equitable tolling, as outlined by the Seventh Circuit, by holding that knowledge of the procedural status of a person's case is enough to prevent equitable tolling. As this court has stated, the standard for equitable tolling in this circuit is whether a reasonable person in the plaintiff's position would have been aware of the fact that they had suffered an injury. Here, Ms. Cordova Soto was told by one government official and by a purported legal aid organization that she had no way to challenge her removal. She was told that her best bet was to sign the stipulated request for removal and that she had no way to fight this. Therefore, a reasonable person in Ms. Cordova Soto's position who was unrepresented would have been reasonable to not think that she had any way to challenge this. This court has stated that a person is reasonable to rely on assurances of government officials in the Gabrov case. And Ms. Cordova Soto did not become aware of the problems with the underlying removal order until she did retain counsel.
Well, that would be in March of 2010, wouldn't it?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that it was March of 2010. It was sometime in 2010 before she filed the petition for review. And in that case, counsel was certainly reasonable to attempt to challenge the underlying removal order through the reinstatement.
That seems like a strategic choice to me. What would have stopped her from filing the motion to reopen contemporaneous with the reinstatement effort?
I see my time is up, Your Honor.
Ms.
Cordova Soto, first counsel, possibly for some of the reasons this court has brought up today, was likely unaware that Ms. Cordova Soto had the opportunity, and her best opportunity was to challenge by filing a motion to reopen. For the foregoing reasons, we ask this court to reverse the dismissal of Ms. Cordova Soto's appeal and to submit to the board for proper consideration. Thank you.
All right, and thank you to both counsel, and I understand the effort for the petitioner.